You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. This is the American Hour. Thank you for joining us tonight. We've got a great lineup for you and some good breaking news, informational news, things that you're not going to hear in the mainstream media, and I've got a bunch of audio clips to play tonight that you will not hear on TV, on the radio. You might hear parts of one another, but I tie them together to make a very specific point that these news pundits are not doing. So welcome aboard. Hey, if you haven't been to our Facebook page, a lot of good information there, and I'm going to get to that in a little bit. We're going to bring Nick Taxi and his commentary on right at the top of the hour here, but I just want to let you know that we've been posting some stuff there, some good information. I have not put it on Facebook yet, but on the website, let me tell you the easiest way to get to our website. Just go to tomgarcia.com. It's that simple. Just type in tomgarcia.com. And I posted a link there today for an article that's supposed to be coming out any day now in the Florida political press about my experience going into the future and what I discovered in the year 2030 about our government and where it's gone based on where it is today and where it's headed. It's obviously a fictional story, but it tries to explain why Obamacare is so dangerous, and it has nothing to do with healthcare. It's so dangerous because it destroys our Constitution with that one individual mandate, and it explains in a very simple-to-follow way. It's really a story of upcoming legislation and how our country changes because of that one landmark decision, assuming the Supreme Court, and I don't believe that they will because it's just too big a change. It literally does destroy our Constitution. And anyways, I've got quotes from Jefferson and Lincoln in that, and Henry Adams, who wrote History of 1801 to 1809, and very, very good stuff. Nothing you're ever going to get in the mainstream media, although it's going to be in the mainstream media here in the next day or so, but I thought I'd post it online so you can get a read of it ahead of time. Upcoming next week, Thursday, we've got Dave Weldon, former seven-time congressman in the Space Coast of Florida. He has jumped into the Florida Senate race to try and take out Bill Nelson. Oh, my gosh. And that guy is such a lame duck, such a quack and a loser. We've got to get rid of him. The question is, who do we get rid of him with? And we're going to have Dave Weldon on to talk about that and his experience in Congress and what he brings to the table today running for the Senate. The week after, the 28th, we've got Sandy Adams, freshman congresswoman, representing currently District 24, but the new District 7 is what she's running in because we've redistricted here in Florida, and she's up against a tough fight against an incumbent from another district. They're both kind of not merging districts, but they're both choosing to run in that district. He's got a lot of money, and he's already running a lot of ads. I can tell you right now, and Nick, you can. I'll bring you on here in a second. You tell me, isn't this a little bit early for a congressional candidate to be running a lot of ads? Campaign-wise, it's not generally a good idea. So I think there's some worries there, even though some polls suggest that he's way ahead. Why, if you're way ahead, would you be running so many ads? I think he's nervous. I think he's very nervous. So in any case, and by the way, it's John Micah. And John Micah was highlighted in one of the news outlets today as, where is he? He's the chairman of the Transportation Committee, and we've got a major transportation bill coming up, and he's nowhere around. Has he been sort of de facto demoted or what? And that's the question. I think that was on the Shark Tank. Javier Manjarres Shark Tank, if you want to go look at the Shark Tank, I think that might have been there. So in any case, we got a lot of good stuff coming up. We've got a great show tonight. We've got Nick Taxia, who's going to start us off and get us on a roll. Nick, how are you doing tonight broadcasting with us live from Washington, D.C.?
Hey, I'm great. I'm cool. You?
Oh, I'm doing good. Oh, geez, it's been beautiful here the last few days in Florida, and hot and humid, but beautiful. So in any case, hey, it's all yours, Nick. Take it away. I've put it out there on the website and Facebook and Twitter that you're going to be leading off the hour and that you are going to be doing some stand-up. Do you want to tell people where you're going to be doing your stand-up comedy tonight in D.C.?
Yeah, it's the it's an open mic. I've only been doing stand-up for a little over a year, so it usually takes a couple years and a lot more than what I do to end up getting to be, a feature and a paid, headliner and all that. So I wish I had more time to do it more often, but I can't. So I'm going to be doing it at RFD Lounge in Chinatown. And Tom, are you there, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, good. The phone just went silent, and I guess it's, when I talk, yours and goes silent, whatever. It's the RFD Lounge. It's the biggest and without a doubt the best open mic stand-up place in the D.C. area. So it's always a good crowd, and it gets really loud and can get really raunchy. So
okay.
That's my environment.
All right, cool. All right, well, what did you have planned for us tonight?
I was looking at this new article, the newest of new bans that New York City is proposing. This comes from myfoxny.com. The board, handpicked by Mayor Michael Bloomberg, that must approve his ban on selling large sugar-filled drinks at restaurants, might be looking at other targets. The New York City Board of Health shows support for limiting side blah, 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 drinks. We already know about drinks. But then they'll go on to other high-calorie foods like the popcorn isn't a whole lot better than soda, said one member, Bruce Vladek. Thinks limiting the sizes for movie theater popcorn should be considered. So they're going to go after movie popcorn. There's also talk in here about limiting milk drinks, because milk is fattening, has calories in it and all that. So that just rides on top of, I just think it was a week ago that they decided to ban the sugary drinks. Yeah,
well, they're still just in discussion about it, but yeah, it's a threat. It's a threat.
They'll do it. They'll do it. Mayor Bloomberg has banned smoking in bars and clubs, private establishments. He banned trans fats, cell phone use in cars, not texting. Texting I can understand, but talking. Banned walking and listening to your headphones at once. You can't walk through an intersection without removing your headphones. Then moved on to big soda, now big popcorn. And what I want to know, New York mandates so many things. I think they mandated that you recycle, and last year they mandated that students get taught sex ed in school, in middle school. So now, how your parents want to talk to you about sex, that's no longer, in their control. What first comes under state control. How much would people pay at this point to see Mayor Michael Bloomberg run over by a runaway steamroller? That's a very, that is a very pertinent question. I've been posting it around Facebook. It's indeed a question for the ages. Let's say this. You put an ad in the paper saying that on this day, a steamroller operator will keel over at the wheel and fall out of the steamroller, letting the steamroller run loose on its own. It's rolling down a hill. At the bottom of the hill is Michael Bloomberg. Oh, let's ban this. Oh, let's ban that. I know what we can. How can we screw people over this way? Oh, okay. How about not smoking 800 miles away from any public building in New York? Okay, let's do that. And there comes the steamroller. And you told people that on this day, at this location, at this time, Mayor Michael Bloomberg would be run over by a steamroller. How much would people pay to see it? $1,000? I'm personally up to about 10,000. There's a steamroller, there's Bloomberg. Oh, I want to. it begs the question. And Mayor Bloomberg, I'm only 2 hours away by train. I'm sure you could fly here within 80, 90 minutes. And I think that the New York City Council should pass a mandate mandating that you, Mayor Bloomberg, should kiss my ass. That's what I think. It's Greek. It's hairy. It's just like a stuffed animal. You can snuggle right up to it. Just kiss it. That's what I think the mayor should do. I think you should kiss my ass. It's people like him that got me really, really, really aggravated years back and got me back. You know what? I'm going to go back into college and go into enter politics and see where I go from there. Maybe I'll run for office. Maybe I'll end up being a satirist. Who knows? I don't know. But people ask me, why are the S's on your site in progressive? If you go to duhprogressive.com, why are the S's pink? Well, they're pink because of people like Michael Bloomberg. Because it's people like Michael Bloomberg that are the Nazis of today. Just little, who knows what they would do if they were given free rein, carte blanche, to go about doing what they did. The founding fathers, they took their cues from people like John Locke and other products of the Enlightenment. And John Locke, he said, the natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and yada, yada, the quote goes on. Thomas Jefferson, I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than to those attending too small a degree of it. With people like Bloomberg seemingly gaining power, gaining influence, gaining in number, I don't know if that's true anymore. I don't know whether John Locke is any longer correct. People want to be individually free, yes, themselves. But do we want others to be individually free? I'm really, really close, Tom, to declaring these guys only half right. They're only half right. We long to control and dominate each other. But that's, you know, my mom always used to say, no matter where you are, Nikki, remember, Nikki, no matter where you are or what you're doing, somebody somewhere wants to F with you. And that's true. No matter where you are or what you're doing, somebody somewhere wants to screw around with you. So if Michael Bloomberg, I call him the walking pro-abortion argument. That's my pet name for him. He really emphasizes a sickness. It's a natural defect in the human psyche, which is why real liberty, like that espoused by our founders and people like John Locke and all that, is such, I think, an anomaly and is extremely very hard to maintain. And the more technologically advanced we get, the more we amalgamate, the more we literally move closer to each other and become less a rural dwelling culture, an agrarian society, the harder and harder it is to stop the little Caesars of this world, like the 200-pound hemorrhoid currently sitting in the New York City mayor's office. And it's just, that was my question. How much would you pay at this point to watch Michael Bloomberg get struck by a runaway steamroller? Or better yet, a soda truck? Tom, yeah. What's your price?
Oh, I think maybe around $1,000.
Yeah. I'm up to $10,000.
You know, and I think the people of New York have to pony up. I mean, they really have to pony up because they're the ones that are suffering through this. But, you know, I found an interesting article because my wife had told me, a month ago, that popcorn actually is got a lot of antioxidants in it. And they're calling it the king of snack foods, that it's much more healthy than any other snack food, and it's healthier than some fruits and vegetables. Now, they're not saying give up fruits and vegetables and just eat popcorn, but here's the ironic thing. The study that actually did this and went through this to determine that these polyphenols are in these antioxidants are in the hull of the popcorn, the corn, and so when you pop it and you get it, his name is Jeffrey Bloomberg. Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. Yeah. Quite ironic.
So I think we need Jeffrey Bloomberg, his name's good, Bloomberg. I refer to the mayor as Bloom Turd or Gloom Turd,
yeah,
because that's what he is. He's like a, a gloomy, well, turds are all gloomy, but he's a gloomy turd. And, okay, anyways, I'll let you get back to what you're doing.
Well, what can I say? I wouldn't doubt that it, you know, as uncomfortable as some of your listeners may find it, I wouldn't doubt that in some of the Planned Parenthood offices in New York, they actually have a picture of Michael Bloomberg on the way out. For the, you know, now think twice, girls.
You might have one of these.
Really think about it. You might have one of these. Okay, all right, now you're back in. Okay, great. Yeah, that could be the best. Pretty soon, New Yorkers, they won't be able to eat anything because every time they go to put something in their mouth, they'll think of Mike Bloomberg and just projectile spontaneously just vomit.
Yeah.
Just, wow, these chips are good. Oh, thought of Mike Bloomberg again. Yeah. So eventually, everyone, he could end up causing the starvation of everyone in New York City. You know, he really could. And it doesn't, what you said about the popcorn study, it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, it matters. That's interesting. It goes to support, you know, our side of the aisle, our side of the argument. It doesn't matter. I don't care. It could be an enormous tub of lard. They could have lard milkshakes, which is pretty much what a McDonald's milkshake is anyway. It doesn't matter. I put into my body what I want, as long as it doesn't make me flip out and eat off faces of homeless men. That's what I do. I can put, if I want to put a cigarette to my lips and puff on it, that's my business. If I, you know, I'll never forget. And at some point, the other side also, the Republicans, they can play this game too. Like calling when Bill Frist called for the federal injunction to stop the detubing of Terry Schiavo. That was her.
Mm-hmm.
As tragic as that situation was. What in the hell business is it of the federal government to step in? I'm sorry, but we're living in crap happens. You know, these things happen, and it goes in. So both sides can play this. Oh, let's step in and save everybody from you know, a husband that wants to get at insurance money, or let's save people in this case from themselves, which is what Mayor Bloomberg and all the little freedom haters, which can mainly be found on the left side of the aisle today, seem hell bent on doing. So, Mayor Bloomberg, you have a personal invite from the Progressive, DUHProgressive.com, Nick Taxia, to kiss my hairy Greek ass. It's right here. It's got your name. I'll shave a nice little patch off. For your little tyrannical lips, you prick. There. Sorry. He really gets under my nerves.
We'll email him a copy of the show here. I'm sure he'll listen to it and give you a call, Nick. So, well, he can give me a call and then I'll get him in touch with you. But
he'll probably move to get the show banned.
Good luck because I live in Florida. Banned. So he can kiss my you know what too. So. Although I don't have a hairy Greek, you know what? So,
well, your last name is Garcia, so it can't be just as it can't be as clear as a bell down there. I know that.
Yeah, so. But my grandmother was Irish, you know, so I'm Lily White when it comes to places that haven't seen the sun. And but anyway, I know you got your show to do tonight. You're going to go do the stand-up. And listen, most people, give yourself some credit, because most people would be scared to death and unable to get up on a stage in front of a bunch of people like that, even if it is open mic. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, especially if you're not doing well, you're going to know, and who's going to want to go back to that? But you've been at it for a year, so you must be doing well. I've seen some of your YouTube clips. They're great. They're funny, and so, you know, hey,
they're not for kids.
Got it.
Yeah. Just remember, they're not family friendly. So if you're listening, you know, make sure the kids aren't around. I gotta move more towards, you know, become and this happens only with time and experience, become more versatile and get into more, you know, PG type of comedy, and it can be done. I just came from they had the funniest Fed competition, federal workers getting up and making jokes because they have to try so hard. Just get up there. You know, we'll you don't have to say anything. We'll just laugh at you. So I just came from that, and that was PG. They had to be PG, yep. And it was, you know, they were successful. So anyway, the site once again, duhprogressive.com. My current story has to do with this poor bisexual man who he was caught having an affair with another man by his wife, and his name's Robert Perlone. It's a tragic story out of Chicago. He got so angry and so guilt-stricken that he beat himself up, punched himself, put his head through the wall, gave himself a concussion, and the federal government is going to charge him now with a hate crime. His gay side, you know, the heterosexual side, Tom, beat up his gay side. And
right, yeah.
Yeah.
We can't allow that stuff.
No.
No, I could beat myself up and there's no crime, but a bisexual man, because, you know, the Obama administration always talking about the lesbian, lesbian, bisexual, gay, transgender. Somehow bisexual, we've talked about this before, somehow bisexual is a special class of its own when, in fact, you know, they're married and have kids and all that other stuff, but somehow they need special protection. I guess now, since you've discovered it from themselves.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure they'll move on to that. Like, I'm married to, well, a man and a woman, and then a Cambodian tranny, and then another man too. So actually, I have like 3.5 spouses. I'm sure that'll be the case one day. So
I'm
not going to
that.
Oh, this site actually is my site is actually a miserable depiction of what's really coming down the line eventually. You know.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah. Anyway, I hope this guy, Mr. Poloni, fares well, and his wife has defended him, and the U.S. attorney or U.S. prosecutor handling the case has told her, you know, please, you know, stop defending your husband. She loves him. She loves the poor guy. She's
right.
Defending
yeah.
him. He's like, stop defending him because you're encouraging hate crime.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, Nick. Well.
All right, Tom.
Thanks. We'll see you next week. The next 2 weeks, assuming that you're going to be coming on, I think you were scheduled to. We've got the former congressman, and then Congresswoman Sandy Adams on the 28th. So if you can't make it on early, then or can't make it on late, then we'll have to, you know, postpone. But they're both going to be coming on at the top of the hour. So whenever we're finished with them, it will slide you in there, and you can even pre-record something if you wanted to. So anyway, it's been a pleasure. Enjoy your stand-up tonight, and we'll see you next week.
Okay. All right. Can I mention one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We have breaking news, not now, but coming in the coming next week, about Mitt Romney's running mate. They've come to a decision, and that story, only we have it, is going to break on Dub Progressive next week. So come Monday or Tuesday, you know, log on, check it out. Uh-huh. Find out who he's chosen. It is a shocker, Tom.
Oh, my gosh. I can only imagine. Well, we'll make sure we post it on Facebook and the website and Twitter it out there. And we can hardly wait to see who it is.
Yes, it will surprise you, really. She's very unique. I just gave a clue.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh. Okay, now we know.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
I have an idea who it is. Okay. All right, Nick, my friend. Well, thanks.
All right.
Have a great evening. Enjoy
right.
your night
Good
out, it. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Thank you so much.
All right, everybody. Nick Taxi of dubprogressive.com. Check out his website. There's some hilarious stuff on there. There's some really funny things. I just laugh thinking about some of the stuff, like the, I think it was the Gaddafi cheeseburger. You're thinking, what are you talking about? The cheeseburger that looks like Gaddafi? Well, and that might not even be it. I don't even remember because it's been a while. But there's some funny images, some hilarious stuff. And just some of the side stuff that look like ads and that kind of thing, you got to go check out. But anyways, hey, I've got an audio clip that I'm going to play that I've been wanting to play for a couple days now. And this is put together by the RNC. It just goes to show how technically oriented and how detailed President Obama is when it comes to the economy.
We're now seeing some headwinds.
Headwinds. Some tough headwinds.
One of the headwinds that the economy is experiencing.
Our economy has been facing some serious headwinds.
We're facing some tough headwinds.
Obviously, we're experiencing some headwinds.
The economy's experienced some tough headwinds.
The biggest headwind the American economy is facing right now.
Some strong headwinds this year.
Those two things are huge headwinds in terms of growth.
We've got some headwinds, and there will continue to be some headwinds.
And just like at this time last year, still facing some serious headwinds. Our economy has been facing some serious headwinds.
He's so technical. Oh, my gosh. He's just so technical and detailed and really understands the economy. Headwinds. Some headwinds. In other words, excuse. Now, I've watched the video, and if any of you have watched it, those are all different clips. It's not just repeating him on the same speech. They're all different speeches. Every single one of those is a different speech. So one word comes to mind. Pathetic. Pathetic. So I've got a couple stories here that are going to kind of lead into not what I usually do on the show, where we talk about, details, unlike the president. We're going to talk about some headwinds. Okay, you know, and we need to talk and have discussions about real solutions, what the real problems are and what real solutions are. But I want to lay the groundwork for something that I've been talking about for quite some time. That is that the Democrat Party and particularly this administration are going to lie like you've never seen before. And it's not just because they're desperate and they're running behind in the polls and that sort of thing, but because we have a leader, the president of the Democrat Party and his obvious administration and his campaign, that is a prolific lifetime liar. That's just what he does. And he does it with such ease on even trivial things. So I'm going to try and set the stage for something that we're going to, believe it or not, we're going to get to the economy and what he's been talking about and what we need to make sure people don't buy into. Okay, this is a real situation, a real issue. But I got to build up to it, okay? So in American Thinker, let's see, I think it was today, yes, by Jack Cashel, great writer, and he basically tells us about Barack Obama's half-brother who was over in Kenya. And in his book, Dreams of My Father, he outlines in a very detailed way, over 3 pages long, how he went back around 88 to meet with, or to visit Kenya, but he got to meet his brother and spent considerable time with him. And then got together with him later on, like a week or so later, and spent, again, considerable time with him. And then when he's doing an interview on CNN in 2009, now he was in China, visiting China, and his half-brother had left Kenya, had actually come to the States and gone to, what school did he go to, Cambridge or some school like that. Went to a nice, fairly prestigious school, and I've seen the clip of his brother talking, and he's quite well-spoken. And then he decided not to go back to Africa, but rather to go to China, and he's been in China ever since. So when President Obama made his China visit, he got an opportunity to meet with his brother. Now, in an interview, and I was going to get the clip from this, but I'm just gonna read it to you. So I don't have the soundbite for this. Let me just check and see if maybe. Oh no, I do have it. Okay, here's what the president himself. No, that's not it. Let me just double check and make sure I might or might not have it. I don't think I pulled this one up today. Apologize. Okay, now, so here's what he says. About a minute and 50. If you go, the video's there. If you go to American Thinker, there's a link to the video, and you can watch it for yourself. And he's being asked about, hey, how was it, you know, meeting with your brother? And apparently he must think that maybe he doesn't want to be too close and just needs to distance himself a little bit. But the evidence is already there in his book, Dreams of My Father. He says, well, you know, I don't know him well. And then here's the kicker. I met him for the first time a couple years ago. Now, this is in 2009. In his book, he met him in 1988. And extensively. got to spend quite a bit of time with them. Now, I understand, you know, that just because you spend an hour with somebody 1 week and then maybe another hour with them the next week doesn't mean you know them real well. No. But here's what he says. I don't know him well. Okay, fine. I can kind of go along with that. But then he has to throw in there, I met him for the first time a couple years ago. Couple years ago? So Cashel, you know, digs a little more into this where Obama talks about while he's meeting with him, his stepfather's there with, you know, his actual mother, his brother's actual mother, that was married to Barack Obama's father at one point. That's how they're half brothers. And he's bouncing their kid they had together on his knee. Well, his kid was born before 1980. So that'd make him about at least 9 years old. Who bounces a nine-year-old on their knee? It makes it sound like he's a little kid. So what Cashel thinks really happened is that Obama visited his the mother, the woman who was married to his father, and the half-brother wasn't even there, talked to her a little bit, pulled a little information out, and that's what he put in his book. So we've got a guy who has a repeated pattern and habit of essentially making things up that have gone into his books, books that are supposed to be nonfiction biographies that turn out to be highly fictionalized in many cases. So that's the first little step. The next one is an interview with Bill O'Reilly, and Bill O'Reilly really kind of set him up because Bill O'Reilly knew about some of the stuff that was written in this book. And President Obama quotes Reverend Wright in his book. Quotes Reverend Wright in his book. And in the quote, it's really kind of a racist, you know, statement that Wright had made. And so O'Reilly's trying to find out if, you know, did you ever hear these kind of things in the church? Oh, no, never heard it. You know, remember that was when he was throwing Reverend Wright under the bus. No, I didn't go to the church that much. And I didn't. So O'Reilly is pressing, and he specifically says, did you ever hear him say anything derogatory about whites? And President Obama says, no, he never said any of that kind of stuff, not when I was there. But it's in his book that he did. He doesn't remember what he wrote in his book. So here's the sound clip. I've collaged a couple things together here with my own commentary. It takes about 54 seconds.
Are you a KKKA?
You never heard those comments?
I hadn't heard those
comments.
He
was selling them in the lobby at a church.
What can I tell you?
How many times did you go to church a month?
You know, I probably go twice a month.
And he never said inflammatory stuff?
He didn't say stuff like that. All right?
Did he say white people were bad?
No.
So we just heard Bill O'Reilly specifically ask President Obama if he ever heard Reverend Wright say anything bad about whites. And the president says no. But then we have the president in his own words from his own book, Dreams of My Father, quoting Reverend Wright. And here's what he had to say.
It is this world, a world where cruise ships throw away more food in a day than most residents of Port-au-Prince see in a year, where white folks' greed runs a world in need, apartheid in one hemisphere, apathy in another hemisphere. That's the world.
There you have it. White folks' greed. White folks' greed. So he's heard Reverend Wright say give racist remarks in sermons because he's got one of those in his book, and that was from Reverend Wright's speech that he gave, Audacity of Hope. And isn't that what Obama then went and wrote his second book about, Audacity of Hope? So there it is, and yet he denies it. Chronic liar. But it doesn't end there. We're getting there. Now we're starting to get into the economy a little bit. Just not too long ago, the president told some folks, I think he was at a college, about cutting jobs, federal jobs. So he doesn't want anybody to buy into this notion that he's for a bloated government. He is on top of cutting government jobs. And then, of course, just last week he told us the private sector is doing fine. It's government jobs that are hurting. Now, I realize there's a difference between federal jobs and state jobs, but they're government jobs. And what he's saying is the private sector's okay, but government's not okay. We need more government jobs. Now, maybe he means specifically at the state level, but first of all, the federal government has really no authority, no reason to be supplying and paying for state-level jobs. He thinks the federal government ought to be helping the states. Here's how they can help the states. stop taking money from the states. In other words, stop taking so much money from us so that the states have more money. But anyway, so here's the clip, and I pieced the couple different pieces together, but he is essentially trying to brag about cutting the size of government, then government being too small is the problem. So which is it? You know, so it's your fault then. It's your fault. And, you know, the other thing is that, let's just go ahead and listen to it. And the other thing I need to say about this clip is when he talks about cutting jobs, we're going to get to – that's actually another one. Let's play this one right now.
The only time government employment has gone down during a recession has been under me. So I make that point just so you don't buy into this whole bloated government argument that you're hearing.
So Obama is taking credit for cutting government jobs. He's taking credit for cutting government jobs. But then just 1 month later, what does he say?
The private sector is doing fine. Where we're seeing weaknesses in our economy have to do with state and local government. Oftentimes, cuts initiated by governors or mayors who are not getting the kind of help that they have in the past from the federal government.
Where in the structure of our government, i.e. the Constitution, does it say that the federal government is supposed to be helping the states out monetarily and fiscally? Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. So, again, tries to take credit for cutting government jobs, but then says government jobs are the problem, and so out of touch, the private sector is doing fine. Okay, finally, we're going to move on to the deficit. The president has been going around saying that he inherited a trillion-dollar deficit. I got the audio right here. Trillion-dollar deficit. But if you go to our Facebook page, and that's why it's important to be going to our Facebook page, I put up a copy of the 2009 budget of the United States as supplied by the I'll get you the right bureau name here as I pull it up, the U.S. Government Printing Office. And the deficit that was proposed by George Bush for the 2009 budget ended up having a shortfall of $407 billion, so a deficit of $407 billion. But Nancy Pelosi did not get the budget completed in the House. Remember, they had a solid majority. Did not finish the budget until after Bush's term. So Obama had been in office for 3 months. It was not signed until March 2009, which was 3 months, January, February, March, after Obama took over. So Obama signed that budget. The one that George Bush presented, $407 billion deficit. What do you think the deficit was that he signed? Handed to him by the U.S. Congress, the Democrat-led Congress, Democrat-led Senate. $1.4 trillion, to be precise, $1.413 trillion. More than a trillion more than George Bush's requested budget. He tripled down on what George Bush was, but he's saying he inherited it. Yet at the same time, he says, and that's where this audio clip is important, he says that the stimulus worked. The stimulus worked. Well, the stimulus is part of that $1.4 trillion in 2009. So he wants to take credit for the stimulus working, but then at the same time, he says he inherited all that debt. So which is it? It worked and it was valuable, or it's bad now that you can't turn the economy around after 3.5 years, and it won't be turned around by 4 years, the end of your term. Which is it? You can't have it both ways. And that's, again, the chronic lying of someone who has spent a lifetime lying about anything and everything. But this is where it starts to get big. So let's listen to that audio. And here we go.
Now, you know, without relitigating the past, I am absolutely convinced, and the vast majority of economists are convinced, that the steps we took in the Recovery Act saved millions of people their jobs, or created a whole bunch of jobs. And part of the evidence of that is as you see what happens with the Recovery Act phasing out. You know, when I came into office and budgets were hemorrhaging at the state level, part of the Recovery Act was giving states help so they wouldn't have to lay off teachers, police officers, firefighters. As we've seen that federal support for states diminish, you've seen the biggest job losses in the public sector. Teachers, police officers, firefighters losing their jobs.
So the $1 trillion that President Obama and Nancy Pelosi added into the budget for 2009 was a success. It did everything it was supposed to do. It helped turn the country around. Oops. Except 3 years, 3 summers after the summer of recovery, we haven't recovered. And now what's the president's tune?
I inherited a $1 trillion deficit. I inherited a $1 trillion deficit. I inherited a $1 trillion deficit.
Yeah, that actually was President Obama crying, because he's a big crybaby, but he's also a chronic liar. So he didn't inherit a $1 trillion deficit. He added that into the budget. He signed that budget. It was his budget. He could have vetoed it. He could have told Nancy Pelosi, make some changes. This is too much. But no, he didn't. He is the author and owner of that budget. So when it comes to the economy, we have to make it clear to our friends and neighbors that he did not inherit a $1 trillion budget. That's an outright lie. It's an outright lie. And to get back to one thing that I forgot to mention, again, on our Facebook page, if you go down below the post where I show you the deficit that we ended up with under the George Bush request versus what was enacted, a over $1 trillion difference, we've got a chart that's quite important that, again, shows the chronic lying when the president said that he's cut federal jobs. I don't know how many jobs he's cut, but since taking office, federal employment is up 11.7%, while the rest of the economy is suffering unemployment that just increased. It's at 8.2% unemployment. That employment is going down, and more people are leaving the workforce completely and not even and no longer able to draw on unemployment. So they're not even being counted, and yet it's at 8.2%. Federal employment is up 11.7%. The chart is right there for you to look at. Another one of our chronic lying in chief's lies. It's just lie, lie, lie. So what I said, and I predicted this 2 years ago, we're going to see more lies, more lying, and very direct, obvious, clear lies like never before, because this president can't run on his record. And of all the presidents that have suffered a recession, except one, I'll get to that in a second, but all the presidents that have suffered a recession, inherited a recession, every single president in the history of this country has turned that around in 2 years. The only one that didn't was FDR. He not only turned a recession into a depression, but he created a depression within a depression. And how did he do that? Well, let's see if these kinds of policies sound familiar. Not that the president's been able to get away with raising taxes, but he wants to raise taxes. And that's precisely what FDR did, raised them significantly to the highest percentages ever in the history of our country. Raising taxes, price fixing, telling private industry and private businesses what they had to charge, period. And then creating bureaucracies to go around and make sure that dry cleaners and shoe shines and the other manufacturing sector were charging precisely what the government said they had to charge, destroying crops and livestock to try and drive the prices up, totally manipulating and controlling industry and agriculture. And that created the worst recession, i.e. a depression, and then a depression within a depression that drug on for 10 years. These are the kind of policies that this president wants to follow. The failed policies of the only president to not be able to turn around a recession,
the one president who couldn't turn one around, FDR, and when did it turn around? Not because we came out of World War II, but because he was no longer president. That's what turned it around. So the chronic lying is going to continue, and just be aware. And we will continue to cover this stuff. You've heard some of these clips, but you never heard them pieced together like that to show precisely why he's lying and has to lie, because he can't tell the truth. He can't run on his record. It's so abysmal. So abysmal. And, terrible. I mean, we've got on our chat site, we've got Flycatch, who says Obama is nothing more than a closet Muslim, plain and simple. Well, you know, some of the evidence really does point to that. And Obama and his wife both hate whites. I do believe they're both racist, absolutely. They've made statements. For example, when he said, Barack himself said that his mother was a typical white woman. What if a white person described a black woman as a typical black woman? Oh, that would be totally racist. He gets away with it. He is, and the final comment is he's sly like a fox. Absolutely. He is sly like a fox. And what does the fox do? Cheat, steal, lie, do whatever you can to make up for his small size. And, they're good at it. So we've got a president who is a chronic liar and has been, and we've seen this pattern based on his books and his early life, high school, college, that have slowly now come out, that he has a pattern of lying about small and large things throughout his life. He's hiding as much as he can about who he really is. You know, he was born in Kenya, according to his biography, his literary biography that was there, published for 16 years. Not until he ran for president did suddenly that go away. So he knew about it. No, he just suddenly discovered it? No, he knew about it the whole time in an attempt to try and sell his books. So he lied about who he was, thinking that that would help sell more books, which is essentially deceiving people as fraud. So chronic pattern of deception throughout his life, and we're going to see it ramp up like never before. The problem he's got that he's facing right now is he's never really been caught and held accountable in the past. So he's pretty much gotten away with it for so long that he thinks that's his pattern. He can't change his stripes. He's going to continue to lie to the American people, to himself, to everybody, because that's how he's lived his life, and that's what's going to continue, and people need to be aware of it. So next week we've got a great guest, Dave Weldon, who spent 7 terms in Congress, got a lot of experience there, going to be great to get his insight onto what he's seeing going on now. You know, he retired from politics. He had no intention of going back. That's my understanding from people that I know have been close to him. One of his his campaign manager was chief of staff in Florida for him during that whole time period, and I know fairly well up in the Titusville area, J.B. Kump, and I think I saw that he's managing his campaign right now, or at least maybe chief of staff again. So it's going to be very interesting to see what pushed him to this point of having to come out of retirement to run for the Senate. Now, when I say come out of retirement, it's not because he's an old guy. It's because he's a doctor. And he felt compelled to run when he was, you know, younger and had just gotten a practice going, felt compelled to run and make a difference then. And after 7 terms, believed that he had made a difference and it was time to go back to practicing medicine. But he's leaving his practice. I can tell you right now, a good medicine practice is not going to be making as much as he's going to make as a U.S. senator. So he is definitely sacrificing to do this. So we'll get all that from him. And then, of course, the next week after that, Sandy Adams. And that's going to be a great interview because I am so interested and intrigued to find out about her perceptions as a first-term congresswoman in the House of Representatives and what she saw. And she's a very, very honest person and is going to, you know, lay it on the line for us what she saw, what her perceptions were, what she, you know, surprised her or didn't surprise her, and who she thinks is really leading the charge and got the right leadership skills there in Congress. So that's going to be some good stuff. In any case, all right, well, thanks for joining us tonight. We'll keep posting stuff on Facebook and Twitter throughout the rest of the week leading up to the next show, and make sure you don't miss that. It's going to be a really good show, and Nick will be back with us for that show as well. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of the week and a great weekend. We'll see you next week on the American Hour.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.